Yeah, he won.
Welcome back, or welcome to the Defining Endurance Podcast. I am your host, Coach Andrew Simmons, and today we are talking about fall marathons, all things related to racing this fall. Now, at the time of recording this, we are at the early August phase for those that are getting ready for CIM. You know, we're 3 months out, and we are at that 12-week, 16-week phase for a lot of you guys in December. If we're talking about, you know, things like Chicago or maybe some of these other races that are pretty big, you should be in the early phases of your prep. If not, now's your time to start getting ready for this. And I understand why you may have held off from doing some of those long runs and some of those other things. It has been very, very hot this July and August. Even here in Colorado, we started things off super nice in the end of May and June. We had some great rain and precipitation. Now we're paying for all of that enjoyable moisture that we desperately, desperately needed out here. Great. Thankfully, we're out of drought, but now we are in the heat of summer. So a couple things to think of if you are someone that struggles in the heat. Number one thing I want you guys to think about when it comes to training for a fall marathon is the timing of your workouts, at least for the next 4 to 6 weeks. What's going to be important is timing your workouts to be in a place where it's going to give you a little bit of heat stress, but not so much that you can't do your workout, that you're not able to hit goal pace because it's too hot, or the applied stress is just going to make things extra, extra, extra difficult. And even then, marathon pace, if we're really, really thinking about it, something you're going to do for 26.2 miles, 2.5 to 3.5 to 4.5 to 5.5 hours should not be at a pace that is so difficult that you can't do it or can't do the effort in about 65 to 75 degrees. Once we get beyond that, hard to keep the body cool no matter how heat adapted you are. This is not an episode on heat adaptation. I'm not worried about the heat being a major factor if you start training now. October, yes, can still be warm. Chicago has had some nasty hot spikes. I don't believe they've ever had to cancel, but I know that they've had to put up a red flag warning, which is something that we cannot control. And so all of what we are going to talk about this episode goes back to a couple things. There are two things we have to consider when we boil down to the basics of being an athlete. That is, what is controlled and what is uncontrollable. You don't control the weather, but what you can do is control how you prepare for that weather. You don't control things like an upset stomach unless you made some poor decisions about what to eat and what you have prepared your body for. So the number one thing that I think is really, really important as you guys start looking at the race, maybe you've already chosen a Chicago or Indianapolis Monumental, Grand Rapids, I'm thinking of some Midwest races off the top of my head. What are you doing to specifically prepare for this course? When do those hills hit you? If it's a hill at mile 20, which is in the last, you know, roughly quarter of a marathon, are you hitting hills in the last quarter of your long run? Are you trying to get specific with your long run? Are you trying to do things that specifically mimic what you are going to experience on race day? So a couple of other things. Can you have a regular breakfast every single time that you go out? Something that you can prepare, say in a hotel, if you're traveling, things like that. Can you wear similar clothing? Can you drink the same drinks that they're going to have available if that is your fueling strategy? So just a couple of things as we think about being specific and getting specific with our training and looking at the bigger pieces. I want you guys to think that the number one thing that ends up hurting people in fall marathons, besides a lack of preparation and training, is quite often hydration. Now, we've been doing some really cool stuff lately with Scratch Labs, which is a Colorado-based hydration company. And one of the things we've been able to do with them, and I got to watch this firsthand at our altitude camp with about 100-ish high school kids, is that the more that they hydrated, the better they did. We do a 13-mile, about 3,200-foot of vertical climbing. So it's a big day. We budget about 3 hours for this. This year, we put more kids on the top of that mountain than ever before. And it was not just simply because they hydrated during, which was definitely huge, but they were also well hydrated in the days before and the days coming in. There are 3 days of our camp before they go into this climb. And this is a long, tough day. I mean, 3,000 feet of vertical climbing at altitude starts at 9,200 feet. That's a tough day, and it is a character building day. But with a lack of hydration, that day is very, very, very difficult. So one of the things I want you guys to think of is that when you're getting ready for your long run or even a big workout, the number one thing you can do is not just hydrate in the moment, but come in hydrated and think about your hydration as a bigger picture of what are you doing every single day to stay hydrated. And I do endorse absolutely Scratch Labs products. But the other thing that I endorse here is having a mindset where you are always trying to set yourself up for the next day, which means I want you guys to go out and find a hydration product that works for you, that is a regular everyday thing, that's not going to give you a bunch of extra calories, that tastes good, that's going to give you a good amount of sodium and electrolytes, something that you can put in your water bottle. If you're like me, I'm a 2-water bottle person. I like straight water and I like to be able to have my hydration mix. So with that said, staying hydrated, especially as you enter the fall phase of things, super, super important. We can talk a little bit about fueling because hydration and fueling usually go hand in hand. If you find that you have done good preparation in the past and still really, really struggle at mile 20, now we are either dealing with a pacing problem, a fueling problem, or we can narrow it down to kind of a mental preparation problem. And so when we think about first in terms of a fueling issue and how do we prepare for that, because this is all about fall races. So what we are doing right now when you guys are listening to this is going to impact your race down the road. Are you fueling during your long runs? Are you hydrating during them? If you're not, you are not training your gut. You're not giving your gut an opportunity to become conditioned to the fuel that you're putting in it. So even if you're only going out for 10 or 12 miles, and I say only in quotes here, you know, you may get up to 20 to 22 miles. You may not need, quote unquote, fuel to get through that 10 to 12 miles. And I mean, get through it and finish it. That's not the point of your long run. Your long run and the point there is to create an adaptation. And that adaptation is not just an aerobic one. Are you teaching your body how to be efficient with fuel? And if you are someone that struggles with fueling, every long run is an opportunity for you to get better at fueling. So plain and simple, if you are not fueling during your long runs, you are cutting yourself off an opportunity every single week. And you have 12 opportunities. Cutting off one of those isn't always great. So I recommend, you know, finding a couple different products. If you still don't know what works, go to your local running store. There are plenty of people that will be there to tell you, I like this, 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 and this, and this. Those are opinions. What I want you guys to think about is that not everybody else's opinion is worth listening to, even mine. I want you guys to try different things. I want you to try flavors and textures and, you know, different things that work. Some people really like the Martin bicarb gels. Some people want to go completely liquid and use V-Fuel and scratch, you know, supercarb mix. You got to experiment what works for you. For me, I'm going to mix a bottle of about 400 calories for a long run because I want to carry as little as possible in my hand. And I'm going to sip on that. It's going to give me the hydration I need. It's going to give me the fuel I need. It's simple. It's 1 water bottle. I don't have to overthink it. The thing that I've been enjoying a lot on my long runs lately is a soft flask. I don't like carrying a hard water bottle because I feel like I have to overgrip it. It makes my arm hurt. I like a soft water bottle. I can also put that soft water bottle in my belt. I have a flip belt that I love. I can shove it in there when I don't want to use it during maybe the first 4 to 6 miles, and then I can pull it out and hold it in my hand the last 6 to 8 miles of a long run, and I'm good. I don't have to overthink it. It's there, no problems. I'm also looking at a naked belt. Those look pretty rad. I might pick one of those up. Either way, this is not Andrew's personal shopping trip. Let's get back down to business here. I always think that it's important to create and replicate race day. I talked earlier on in this episode about if you're experiencing a hill later on, then you should probably add a hill later on in your long runs. And in general, if you know that you're going to be on a hilly course, don't go run things flat so you can run them faster. that is not going to be good conditioning for your legs. You're not going to get good stimulus of running downhill, carrying momentum, as well as doing things like shortening your stride on the uphill and working on maybe keeping a race pace effort. And how does effort compare to pace in a race? Now, granted, you could go and find many calculators and there's algorithms and all sorts of things that you can find that are going to tell you hit this pace uphill. Have you ever run uphill? Don't even try to hit a pace. I think that is a, you know, hitting an exact number is silly. I think if it's a very long hill, you want to look for a range. But by majority, if you've done training right, you should be able to go up those hills by effort. And what I mean by effort is that if you are going at 7:30 pace and it feels like a 6:07, don't let it go to 8:09:10 when you're going uphill. You're going to unnecessarily increase your effort and output for something that is very short, even 50% of the hill, because you're going to be able to come over the top and you're going to be able to catch your breath. You're going to be able to get your legs turned over, and what may have become 8 minute pace or 8:30 pace going up the hill may be able to turn to 7:15 or 7 flat pace down the hill. And if you expend too much going up and then you're trying to get those legs turned over on the backside, you're kind of doubling your energy cost. Use as little energy and as little effort, if you can think of it that way, going uphill. And then be able to use the momentum and carry yourself downhill and carry that momentum into the next mile even, and just allow that to be something that adjusts your pace. And then hills don't become these huge, hard, big, scary things. Just let it be the same effort. This is something that I applied a lot at the Austin Half Marathon last February. Just going up those hills, I was able to watch myself fall back from my competitors. And I had to trust myself. And that's a big part of training, is trusting yourself. And I watched those athletes go up, 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 up. By the time I got to the top of the hill, I still felt pretty good. I wasn't stressed out. I was able to kind of creep up on those guys, and my legs turned over great on the downhills. And I caught back up with them and they were breathing. I could tell they were over threshold. They put in too much work. Can you guess what happened later in the race? I was able to outpace my competitors and put 20, 30, 40, sometimes a minute and a half into the same people I was with at mile 6.5. So that comes to my second point of fall marathon training. And we talk about that mile 20 point being critical. If you go back a little earlier, I said that it was nutrition, pacing, and then mental strategies. Let's talk briefly about pacing. Right now, in the heat and in the summer temperatures and all of those things, pacing and hitting race pace is going to feel really, really difficult. Set yourself up for success. One of the things that I like to do if I'm going to go do a specific endurance run, and if you've ever trained under my training or anything like that as a listener, specific endurance work are when we're hitting race pace and we are trying to replicate as much of the course as possible. So what that really requires is that you're going to go out and you are going to say, okay, I'm going to do, you know, 6 3-mile loops, because I know that there's aid stations roughly every 3 miles on my course. And so you just set out a little table with a water bottle or whatever it might be, a cup. It doesn't matter. If you're not good at drinking from a cup, practice drinking from a cup. Set it out in your front yard if you can, or I've done it. I've literally put water bottles on the back of the bumper of my truck and parked on a dirt road. And as I go past my truck, I take one, I toss the other like right to the edge of my truck. And you know, that's all I have to worry about. Now, I'm not expected, and I've never raced in a race where I have bottles that are special for me. I'm not a pro. I'm not elite, but if I can just practice getting fluids in just like I would in a race, that's just as good. It doesn't matter if it's in a water bottle or in a cup, unless you're not good at drinking from a cup. And then it is worthwhile for you to practice drinking from a cup. But what's more important here is the overarching theme of trying to have a strategy. And that pacing strategy and hitting pace, if your race is going to be, you know, 60-ish degrees, pretty cool temps, and those temps are only really available to you at 5 a.m. on Saturday morning when your run is planned, you better set your alarm for 5 a.m. Your personal laziness and desire to want to sleep in is going to affect your outcome. I'm just going to be 100% blunt and honest with you. train for the conditions that you're going to train in. You're also going to feel better, and it might actually provide you a confidence boost and an opportunity for a nap later in the day. But the reality is that if you go out and you're saying, okay, I'm trying to hit 6:30 pace for this run, and you're doing it at 5 a.m. and you're hitting it at the temps and you're able to relax and things are feeling good and this workout goes really well, that's awesome. That tells you that, hey, this is the right pace. But if you're constantly pushing that workout, even 2 hours, 2.5 hours, now it's 7:30 to start, and you're not hitting those race pace sections until 8:30 in the morning, sun's up, it's hot, of course it's going to feel harder. And the delta there is that you're not going to be able to know exactly how it's going to feel at those temps. And granted, that seems small, but every time I can give an athlete a small advantage, or they can go out and get something that is replicable to the race that they're going to experience, why would we not seek that out? There is a small amount of discomfort from not sleeping in, and a lot of comfort that you can take to the start line. You are preparing for months, a few early mornings to be able to have confidence is far better than the sleep that you're going to lose. Now, I am a huge proponent of sleep, but you could also go to bed earlier and you're not going to lose a wink. Okay. What I want you guys to be able to do with this is understand that confidence leads into our discussion around mental performance when it comes to training and racing in the marathon. The marathon is not one big hard stab and you're like, oh my God, I've just been wounded. It is a death by a thousand cuts. It's a little ache here. It's a little soreness there that starts to develop. And you have to be tough. And toughness is not just built internal. It is something that is practiced. That toughness is something that you develop in workouts. And a big part of it is also belief and confidence. Huge Ted Lasso fan here. And I really love his views on belief and that whole show and everything. It's a very motivating show, and I love all of the different themes that play out there. But the thing about belief is that you first have to believe that what you are setting out to do is possible. And then from there, you have to come in with a plan. And bad plans executed violently are sometimes better than great plans that are methodical and overthought. If you're going to go out here and put 26.2 mile splits down your arm, what do you think is going to happen when the first one doesn't hit? Now you have to stare. If you don't hit your split at mile six, because for whatever reason, you were 2 seconds slow, now you have to look and say, oh, well, now my whole time's off. What's the mental outcome of that? Now my strategy's gone with 20 miles to go. And the overthinking and all the things that come with that, and you're trying to do the math in your brain, you're distracted. You're not able to be in the moment of actually racing. And so what you need to think about is, instead of looking at individual mile splits and, you know, oh, okay, I got to go 720 pace on this hill, and but if I can get to 650 on the downhill, this is where the feel of racing is what you get with time under tension. When the more that you race, it doesn't matter if it's a 5K, a 10K, a half, a mile, or whatever it is. If you can understand your output and your effort, and you can become intimately aware of what your body is experiencing when it is under pressure and under stress, you can extrapolate that to the marathon or down to the mile. It doesn't really matter, but you have to be able to have had some experience. And so that is why when people come to me and they're like, hey, got a marathon on the books, I'm like, okay, what are you going to do leading up to it? And a lot of them go, I just wanted to do a marathon. And you have to callus yourself to racing. Racing is a skill, and fueling is a skill, and all of these other things are skills. And we often think of running as a skill-less sport. You just go out and run miles. Well, it's not quite like that. We can break it down into running form and say, oh, well, an A skip and a B skip, that's running. That's a drill. That's a skill, right? Well, the skills that we have to practice as runners are all internal. When you're on a basketball court, you very briefly experience the stress and the pressure. You have kind of some underlying stress and pressure because of the game, positioning yourself on the court. And then if you get the ball, it's momentary. It's okay, I got to dribble. You know, I've got to drive. I've got to do whatever. I've got to pass. I've got to shoot. And that is momentary peak stress. Ha, That's happening. It's scary. Or again, if you're able to have a lot of experience on the court, it's no longer scary. It's not, oh my God, I have the ball. How do I get this into the hoop? It's all right. This is my plan. I'm going to move left, fake right. And then I'm going to step away, jumper, and then win the game, right? Like whatever it might be, the stress that occurs from most team sports is acute. It's very small. It's a very short amount of stress that you experience as an athlete. When you're a runner, it's not as high of peak stress, but instead it is a lower and raising to moderate level of stress. And of course, the faster that you race, the more stress you're experiencing. But again, the time frame is very short. In marathons and ultra marathons, the stress a little bit lower, but what's required, and again, this is where I'm going, watch this. I'm going to tie golf and marathon running together. So get ready for this. The reason that golf and marathon running are very similar is that they both require that you are locked in for a very long time, despite disappointment. If you're playing a round of golf, let's say just doing 9 holes, and you're walking the whole thing, and you are playing competitive golf, so there are other players in the game, you are going to hit your ball. And however that happens, whether it slices or it goes exactly where you want, you then have to go walk to the ball, hit the next one and the next one. And there's this constant delayed gratification as you move closer and closer to the pin. And that's just one hole. You extrapolate that to 9 or 18 holes. You have to stay locked in on your mechanics. You have to stay locked in on your swing. You have to be reading the wind and understanding how the green is going to roll and how is this going to lie. You have to be engaged in the process the whole time. And that requires experience. That requires that you are out there and trying to be locked in. When you go practice golf, yeah, it's cool to go top golf and just, you know, absolutely just rip some shots. That's awesome, but it's not actually making your game better, which is kind of like going out and, you know, just getting some fun miles in with your buddies. That's awesome. It's super fun. We all love doing it, but there are times when you've got to bring that focus in. That might be a workout. That might be that specific endurance run I was talking about. And so now you have to experience what a golfer experiences. And you have to stay locked in for a really long time. 9 holes, 18 holes can take hours. I have seen plenty of my athletes track their golf games that are 4 hours, 5 hours long for golf. It's no different than the marathon. It's not nearly as tiring and you don't get to look nearly as cool as you do running, but golf mentally and the mental game they have to play with themselves is parallel to that of a marathon runner. So I will take a personal round of applause now for connecting golf and marathon running. But the reality is that if you can stay engaged, literally corner to corner in this thing, and you can have that baseline pace range in your mind. All right, I'm trying to break 3 here, 655 to 650. I just need to be right around there. If I've got some hills, I know I'm going to have a slow mile, so I should not expect or hold myself to the understanding that it's going to be 655 to 650. That is where you have to be able to know that those things aren't always going to be. But if you go with a range, you're going to be in a happy and healthy place. Other things, I want you guys to actually be able to kind of sit down ahead of the race and not just say sub 3, that's the goal. What are the outcomes here, man? What are you looking for? What are you really trying to get out of this? I want to run sub 3 because I want to run for Boston. I want to qualify for Boston. That other goal outcome may be, I want to make sure that I knock out my fueling. Like, what are the outcome goals that you have along the path to your marathon? I can think of one of the ladies that I coach. She's trying to break 3 hours right now. And one of the big things that was an obstacle for her was fueling during running. She has literally done most of her marathons on less than 150 calories, if she can get that in. That is nothing. That is ill-advised. And one of the reasons that she sought out coaching and working with me was trying to figure out how can we create some creative solutions. And honestly, my creative solution was you just need to try to do this in your workouts and try to do it every day. And we just started with liquids. And then, you know, we were able to have her get through a whole 12 ounce bottle inside a workout, inside a 75 to 90 minute workout. And it was mostly just water. And we slowly, like a lot of it was that she had an aversion to sweetness or tartness or fluids or things in her stomach. And we started by getting in 4 ounces, and then we moved to 6 and 8, and we just progressed it. And now she's in a much better place where I'm seeing feedback from her 2-3 gels in a 16 mile run. And she's able to now fuel like she never did before. And that's not because I'm an amazing coach. It's because she would try and get 2-3 gels down and didn't ever condition her body, her stomach. Her strategy was just, this is what I need to do. And I'm not there. So let's just try to see, to do what other people are doing. And what I want you guys to be able to look at this is that one of the goal outcomes for a lot of you guys may be getting better at pacing or staying mentally engaged the whole time. Well, the first thing you gotta be able to do is notice when you fall out of that engagement mentally, and then say, okay, made it 4 miles, pretty locked in. That was great. Next time 6, 8, allow yourself the ability that when you look at an outcome goal to take your baby steps. Okay, I raised the half and I'm 8 weeks out and I just went 127. Great. That tells you that you're probably pretty close to that 3 hour mark. That's an outcome goal. That's a small thing on the way to the bigger, bigger goal. The other thing here I wanted to come back to you guys with as we shift gears from talking about mental strategies is, what is your, I guess, focus beyond goal pace? What else are you focused on? And that leads back to fueling, hydration, all of those things. Is your mental game, you know, locked in? How are you going to stay engaged? One of the games that I play with myself, I hit mile 20. I know my 6 mile route. That's the game I play with myself. All right, I'm just leaving the house. I've talked about this plenty of times in this podcast. It's my leaving the house strategy. You hit mile 20 in the marathon, just think about leaving your house. It's not going to feel quite as easy as your easy run. But when you hit mile 3, great, you just hit your turnaround point, and now you just got to head home. 5K to go, that's always my commitment point. I know I am locked in, and I am going to suffer and hurt and put myself into a tough, tough spot 5K to go, because I know I can hurt for less than 20 minutes. I know I can, and I just have to stay locked into what I'm doing. How will you guys practice race day? That's the one thing I want you guys to think about as we close out this episode. I know it's a shorty, but what are you guys going to do to practice for race day? I'm going to give you guys an idea here real quick. Think about the Olympic marathon trials that are coming up. It starts at noon on race day. It's a loop course. It's in Florida. So we know it's going to be warm. We know it's going to be hot. We know it's going to be humid. It's going to be in the full sun. How do you think those athletes are going to prepare for that? Do you think that they're going to go out super in their early morning phases of things, or do you think they're going to start their runs later? Now, they have to condition themselves to the heat. Their goal is to not avoid it. They need to lean into that and learn how to cool down their bodies. And what is their fueling strategy, and how does that change from cooler temperatures and easier courses? What it all comes back to is getting specific. The more things that you can figure out and assess and analyze about yourself and how you respond, the better off you're going to be. But the number one thing that holds people back is they never look. I realize that as a coach, it's my job to look out for all of you guys about how to do the best that you possibly can. But I can only encourage self-assessment, and I can only ask good questions. If you aren't asking the questions of yourself or trying to work on your weak areas, I can't save you. That's the bad thing about coaching, is I can write you a great plan. I can ask you great questions, but you're the one that's going to have to do the work to actually go out there and get up early or go out later when it's going to be hot and miserable and figure out that I need to drink a lot more, or I can't have this gel when it's really, really hot. Those are the discoveries that require discomfort that you're going to have to walk through yourself. So as much as getting specific is important, it requires that you understand what you are getting specific about. And really, this usually comes back to course, conditions, and then any weak areas that you've had in the past. And then your whole training is based around the idea, and the work that I do and try to ask really good questions is, how do we work on those and take those weak areas and make them stronger? Not strengths, just stronger, so that by the time you get to race day, you know what you're there to do, and all you got to do is go execute. That's what I've got for you guys this week. I know it is a shorter episode at just under 30 minutes here, but I hope it was packed with some info. I hope it made you think. I hope it gave you some things to kind of chew on a little bit. We'll stick with the food analogy today. I don't know when I'll be able to get another episode out for you guys. I'm recording this in early August, kind of figuring out where I am with the pod, and I love doing this. But I think for right now, with some other projects and some other ideas that are kind of rolling around in my head, this podcast will kind of move into less of a bi-weekly fashion and move more into informational tidbits and sections. And if I feel compelled to create another series, I will. I hope that doesn't disappoint you guys. If you do love seeing this, and love the information that I put out there, please reach out to me. Those are motivating things. It's not that I don't think that people listen or enjoy this, but I've often taken to creating these episodes as a way of creating a scrapbook, in a sense of creating information that not only I can come back to, but also that I can give to my clients, that I can give to other listeners or people that I run into in the street and say, man, you should really listen to episode 113 of my podcast because I talk all about fall marathon preparation. And I think it would give you some good ideas about how to assess yourself a little bit better and what you may need to look at as you prepare for Chicago or CIM. We didn't talk specifically about courses because you can do that research on your own and you're going to figure out your own way to solve your problems uniquely. Strategize with me, strategize with a coach. Work with somebody, create a partnership, because those partnerships and that knowledge when it comes together is a beautiful, beautiful thing. Lean in, work hard, and that's what I got for you guys. So when I have another chance to create an episode, I will, and I look forward to sharing my knowledge and information with all of you guys. Have a great next training run, and I will see you guys on the other side. Later.